Hello and welcome to another episode of These Corners of the World Travel Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly O'Brien. We have a special podcast episode for you today because it's a two-parter. I hope you've already watched the first part, which was all about Kenya. If you haven't, do go and watch that first because this is very much a continuation of that conversation. As I was saying at the end of the last episode, I got way too into this because it was one of my favorite trips ever, and I talked and talked and talked for about an hour and a half, which is too long really for just one podcast episode. So I split it in half, and the first part about Kenya is actually about an hour, and then this part is going to be shorter. It's only going to be about 30 minutes. So I hope you enjoy this part about Tanzania. If you have any questions about African safaris, do leave them in the comments below and I will do my best to answer them. The next day, we went to the Serengeti, which is obviously very famous, and no doubt you guys will have heard of it. So we're in Tanzania now, basically. It was my first morning waking up in Tanzania, and I didn't quite know what to expect. By now, I had fully embraced the Poli Poli way of life. I wasn't sure exactly what time I was being collected, or by who, or who I would be with, or exactly where we were going. But it didn't matter. I knew that someone would come at some point, and that we would go somewhere. And that somewhere would probably be pretty awesome. I was picked up after breakfast by a brand new guide and then swung by three more hotels and picked up three other travelers. Three American boys in their 20s. Our destination, yeah, those dudes became like my brothers. They were so cool. Our destination, the wilds of the Serengeti National Park. It's funny how the brain works. I'm literally in this blog post saying the exact same thing. As it turns out, I couldn't have hoped for a nicer group to spend my day with. The American boys were chatty, engaging, friendly, and just all around nice guys. It was genuinely kind of like I had three US brothers for the day. I'm actually still friends with all of them on social media. After a long drive, made shorter by talking to the Americans, we eventually made it to the famous Serengeti. Since we were to be camping, our road trip turned into a game drive as soon as we crossed the boundaries of the park. It was late in the day, but we still managed to see the usual zebras. Oh yes, just the usual zebras and gazelles. Yes, like we're sick of zebras and gazelles at this stage, I can tell. A good few lions and some huge vultures. It's mad how quickly you can get accustomed to stuff, isn't it? Like, oh, we saw a few lions. Yeah. By far the most interesting aspect of the day, however, was when we reached the campsite. Love it. We saw lions and vultures, and yet the most interesting part I'm talking about is the campsite. I quickly realized just how down and dirty we were getting. Yes, it was very basic, I remember. The campsite itself was just a piece of land near two bungalow-sized buildings, literally in the middle of the Serengeti. One building was the kitchen, the other was a sort of dining hall with folding chairs and tables. There was also a small outhouse at the other end. Other than that, the area was entirely exposed. No fence, no wire, nothing to separate the tents and their occupants from all the animals of the Serengeti. One particularly talkative guide told me the animals come and go from the camp as they please and told me about a time when a lioness came along and sat right on the opening of one person's tent for a while. He said it wasn't uncommon at all to have lions, hyena, and elephant milling about after dark. And when it got real dark. There was a light on in the two buildings for a few hours to eat dinner, and that was it. Everything else was pitch black. As you can imagine, the trek from my tent to the outhouse toilet was terrifying. I still have nightmares about that to this day. I only went twice after dark, and the trek was only maybe a minute or two in length each way, but each time I was absolutely convinced a lion was only inches away from me, ready to spring from the darkness and tear out my jugular. It was terrifying. And, dear reader, I'll let you in on... Oh, I'm blustering here about how I don't scare easily. Yes, okay, whatever. Youth, that's what this is. That's all that says to me. This felt real, probably because it was real. A lion could have sprung from the dark and torn my throat out, and there wouldn't really have been anything to be done about it. I replayed in my mind what the previous guide said to me. They don't like the smell of humans. They know humans are dangerous. The camp always smells like humans. You will be safe. The same guide also told me not to be afraid to go to sleep. He said that when you're in the tent, you're even safer. Sure, a lion could easily tear the side of a tent as if it were made of tissue paper, but apparently they don't know that. They don't think that way. They see a tent and they don't realize it's hollow. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what he told me. They don't know people are literally inside. Like, sure, they can smell people, but they can't tell you're inside that structure, and they don't know that they can get to you, so you are safe. Perhaps he was just trying to allay my fears. I'm not sure, but that is what he told me. Oh my God, this is such a weird thing. I wrote this years ago, and here I am saying, I do realize that this advice could be total hogswash, by the way. My guide could easily have just made this up to allay my fears. Oh man, I'm even to this day using the same bloody words, allay. But I took his word as gospel, and not once, either during or since, have I dared to Google what he said to me to see if it's the truth or not, because I want to believe that it is. Yeah, that's bang on. That's true. Truth or not, it worked. I lay down in my sleeping bag that night in a tent in the middle of the Serengeti, and I heard the distant trumpeting of elephants and the eerie howls of the hyena. Once, just once, I thought I heard the faraway roar of a lion. But I told myself I was safe, they couldn't get me, and so I slept. And after that night, I fashioned myself a shiwi. Girls who go to music festivals might know what I'm talking about. Guys probably won't have a clue. Essentially, it is something that you can pee into and not have to go to an outhouse. Usually you can buy one, it's literally called shiwi. It's like this kind of mask type thing that you put down there, and it has a nozzle, almost like you're pretending to be like a guy. But mine was like more like I got this like cooking funnel and then put it in like a glass drinking container that was actually like a brown color so that you can see into it. And I used that anytime we were tenting in wilderness to pee into and then empty it the next morning. That's probably way too much information. But that is what I did, and it was a lifesaver. Might possibly have been exactly a lifesaver, because I didn't have to go to any faraway outhouses anymore and risk death, essentially. We're getting close to the end now, so we're talking about going from the Serengeti to Ngorongoro, which I love saying. And I have this sticker in my room that says I've been to Ngorongoro, and I love just saying that word. Yes, basically I'm talking about how I had weird animal noises during the night. Fair enough. Freaked out by going to the toilet in the outhouse. Fine. But I wasn't mauled. I wasn't spirited away. All good. And basically we're going to Ngorongoro. I swapped group again here. I went with a group of Dutch people. I was super, unfriendly to them, I think. I didn't add any of them on social media or anything. I was just kind of feeling a bit like, I don't know, socially drained or something, you know, when you're moving group to group to group, you're just kind of like, you know, you get a bit sick of it. So I think, and they were just starting their safari. So we entered the game drive that day, and they were all like super bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, like, oh my God, a zebra. And I was just like, yeah, whatever. I had been at this for like 2 weeks. And I know it sounds a bit jaded and a bit shitty for me to have been like that. But, you know, I just couldn't take the enthusiasm. They were like, oh, there's a giraffe, an antelope. And I had just been seeing those every day for 2 weeks from the crack of dawn till like nighttime. And I was just like, oh, yeah. Cool. I wasn't even like, they were like, oh my God, stop. And they would like take photos of like a zebra. I wouldn't even get up and look out the window because I was just like, I've seen this so many times like this week. So that probably, you know, continued to that. I told them about, you know, I think they thought I was a bit standoffish at first, like, who's this weirdo traveling alone, like not even is paid for a safari and isn't even looking out the window at the animals. So I think that they were like a bit wary at first, but then at lunch I kind of explained, like, I've been here for like 2 weeks, I've seen everything and you know, I've done all these things, and I regaled them with tales and stuff, and they were cool. They were cool. And then we came, actually, this was a cool part, in the afternoon we went to the inspiration for Pride Rock in The Lion King. Hopefully you've seen the Lion. Hopefully everyone has seen the Lion King. But, you know, Pride Rock, the place that they live and stuff, and the rock that Mufasa, or, well, it's Rafiki, actually holding Simba, walks out holding Simba. It's like, ah, you know, it's like the rock. Basically, in Tanzania, there's this place that's like the inspiration for that. And it's this place with all these rocks where basically there's lions and stuff. So we went there and that was really cool. There's like loads of females. I'm just looking at a photo I took and I can see like 1, 2, 3, 4, like 6 females and like, I don't know, 10 cubs or something. Basically just playing, you know, they're in morning light and they're just playing around this like Pride Rock type place. And we parked up and like took some photos and we were looking at that for a while. Saw a male lion on its own. He was pretty majestic in the crater of Ngorongoro. And yeah, I'll read a tiny bit, but I won't go into it in too much detail because time is running out now. Even had it been totally devoid of wildlife, Ngorongoro crater would have been well worth the visit. The landscape there is amazing. The crater itself is the world's largest inactive, intact and unfilled volcanic caldera. The crater, which formed when a large volcano exploded and collapsed on itself 2 to 3 million years ago, is 2,000 feet deep and its floor covers 260 square kilometers. Estimates of the height of the original volcano range from 14,800 feet to 19,000 feet high, which I found incredible. I think that I just wrote that for the blog post because I don't know if I can find it incredible because I have such a bad head for... I can't picture how high that is. You know what I mean? I know it's high, but like I can't, my mind doesn't work like that. Anyway, now the crater is home to all kinds of flora and fauna and is popular with safari groups. We approached on the rim of the crater and descended to the bottom for a game drive, which is where we saw that majestic male lion I mentioned, and then returned before dark to the rim of the crater to set up our camp. Oh yes, another wild camping. I think at this point I was sick of the wild camping. I was like, I need a shower and a toilet. This is the part that I was definitely peeing in that cup rather than going to the outhouse at this point, 100%. As we entered the camp, we found a large herd of elephants there milling around our tents. As with last night in Serengeti, the camp was not surrounded by any sort of fence or wire. The animals were in charge here and they could come and go as they pleased. We set up more tents, threw our stuff inside, and then gathered wood to make campfires later. By the time we finished, it was dark, and we made our way to the only building in the area, a stone-walled structure with a few folding chairs set up in the bare interior. We ate rice and mystery meat, and drank some safari brand beer, and then migrated out to the now roaring campfire where we sang songs and told jokes and drank some more. Yeah. I wish I hadn't drank, actually, because I remember the next morning after that I was a bit hungover and it kind of ruined the safari for me that day. And, oh, here we go. Yeah. I'm here talking about how I made the shiwi. I just told you about that. I'm not going to go into that in detail. Next day, still with the Dutch people, the title of today is Attacked Over a Piece of Chicken. Oh, yes, this was just a bird, I think, just trying to grab the sandwich out of my hand. I woke up in a tent in Ngorongoro Crater to the sound of a herd of raucous elephants trumpeting the rise of the Tanzanian sun. I had survived another night of wilderness camping. No lions had managed to nab me during the night. I suspect this win was largely due to the fact that I gave them substantially fewer chances too. Unlike my night in the Serengeti where I had to scurry from tent to outhouse in the pitch black darkness of the unprotected wildlife reserve just to pee, my night in Lake Manyara was spent entirely in my tent once the campfire had been quenched. I peed in my tent in a makeshift shiwi, brackets, think funnel and bottle, and it was actually the best thing ever. In fact, it was probably even substantially cleaner than the on-site outhouse. That's probably too much information for some people, but it's the reality of life on the road on an African safari. One by one, the campsite members warily unzipped their tiny tents and emerged into the world once more, blinking and yawning at the field in front of them, glistening with dew in the morning light, the vastness of the deep Ngorongoro crater stretching in the hazing golden distance. A quick breakfast and it was time to disassemble the camp. We packed it all up, strapped it to the roof of the safari jeep and we were good to go. First stop, Gorongoro Crater again. Down, 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 the steep decline, all the way to the bottom of the bowl. There we saw more majestic lions prowling around in the morning mist, possibly tracking the movements of faraway herds of gazelles. Marveling at the wildlife, we made our way through the crater and then left for the shores of Lake Manyara. We arrived at approximately lunchtime, pulling up to a place known locally as the Hippo Pool to stop and have our packed lunches. I wonder why it's called that. Before we got out of the vehicle, our guide warned us, don't go too close to the water. In the water up ahead, we could see the backs of maybe 10 hippos. All were roughly in the middle of the body of water. But our guide said that for every hippo we saw, two more were unseen beneath the surface. And if we got too close to the edge, we could end up too close to one coming up for air. Hippos may look placid, but they're actually incredibly dangerous and are very unpredictable. In the end, however, it wasn't the hippos we needed to be wary of. I think I wrote this while I was really, really pissed off because this bird had stolen my sandwich. 5 minutes after sitting down for lunch, one eye on what we were eating and the other eye on the hippos, we found ourselves under attack. So dramatic. A large bird, which we later found out was a martial eagle, had been waiting for us in a nearby tree. Once lunch was unwrapped, he seized his moment. He swooped down on us at a terrible pace, screeching like hell. A lot of you will say it's no big deal, including future you, Kelly. A lot of you will say it's no big deal, it's just a bird, but it scared the living daylights out of us. We were already on edge because of the hippos, and suddenly there's a huge screeching eagle clawing at the food we're all holding mere inches from our face. Anyway. We stayed and watched the hippos. The bird ate the sandwich. That wasn't as dramatic, really, as I had thought it was at the time. And here we come to the very last blog post of the entire safari, which I have titled The End of the Road. I'm just going to read it out because I don't really remember this day, but I wrote at the time, I was getting used to sleeping in small tents at this stage, not to the point where I would miss it necessarily, but I had grown accustomed to it. Today was to be the last day I would ever wake up in that little African tent. It was to be a relatively lazy day by African safari standards, meaning I woke at around 9 a.m. instead of with the sun. After breakfast and a shower, we hit the road. It was just me and my... Shower? Where am I showering? I don't know. Maybe there was a shower house. It was just me and my driver guide today. I had said my farewells to the Dutch group the day before. We re-entered Lake Manyara for a few hours of a morning game drive. We passed through a few areas of dense vegetation, trails winding around trees, weighed down by leaves and vines. At the time, we were looking for tree climbing lions known to frequent the area. We didn't actually see any of those, which was sad. And I went and looked for them again in Uganda. Sorry about the scratching. My cat is clearly digging to Australia to have a poop. We basically didn't see the tree climbing lions. How unfortunate for this podcast, because that would be a great, that would have been a great ending. We saw a lot of monkeys and we saw some basically elephants and stuff. Yeah, basically I'm just saying, oh yeah, then we went back to the Tanzanian city of Arusha. Yeah. I wasn't due to leave Africa just yet. Future plans included exploring the area on Kilimanjaro, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't write any more blog posts after this, so I'm going to have to rely on my memory. Went to Arusha, and I remember I did actually climb Kilimanjaro for, like, the first day. And then, you climbed up and down. Do you know what? I'm just going to pause it here and let the cat do her business. Okay, she's done. We're back. Basically, I was talking about how that was the final blog post that I wrote and that was the end of the safari part. I went to Arusha and that was near Kilimanjaro. So I climbed up with a guide for about a day up Kilimanjaro just for, you know, a day as in like up and then back down again the same day. I'm not sure why I didn't do the entire Kilimanjaro. I guess I didn't have time and I still have this legacy Achilles heel problem. Who am I kidding? I'm not fit enough to climb Kilimanjaro, but it is a goal of mine. Someday I would love to do it. I'm getting physio for the Achilles heel, so hopefully someday that will be healed and then I'll get fit and then I'll climb Kilimanjaro. And I left then, I went back to Nairobi in Kenya, and I went to this amazing place called the Angela Sheldrick Elephant Sanctuary. Let me just quickly Google if that's what that's actually called. Angela Sheldrick Elephant. Oh, yes, sorry, I have gotten it wrong. It's the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust. It was so cool. Basically, I know I said earlier that stay away from anywhere that offers experiences with animals, but this one was genuinely very legit, and it was a proper sanctuary, and they took in elephants that were orphaned by poachers. So a poacher would maybe kill an adult elephant for its ivory, and then there would be a young one around left orphaned, and these people would take it in. Some would be airlifted, I think, from different places to get to Nairobi and get to this orphanage sanctuary place. So basically you could interact somewhat, some parts of the day, with these baby elephant that had been orphaned and rescued. And I think you could feed them a bottle of something. So this was fairly okay, because I mean, they're literally rescuing elephants and they keep them in this massive reserve where they're not like in cages or in pens or anything like that. They're literally almost wild, I would say. And they kind of just, I don't know if they have trackers on, I don't think they do, but like they just kind of know where they are or something. Like it is an enclosed space, but it's vast. And they come back for food every so often, and they take care of them with, you know, feeding them and that kind of stuff. And I went there and fed some of the baby elephants and interacted with them. And you're not really supposed to touch them, but if they touch you, that's allowed and that's okay. There was a cute little baby elephant who like put his little trunk around my hand. Like, I think he kind of wanted to play, actually. It felt like he was super intelligent and like trying to interact with me and like, I don't know, communicate with me in some way. It was beautiful, actually. It was really beautiful. And I also went to this game reserve that I mentioned, the black rhino, before. We saw other stuff, you know, but like pretty much similar stuff that I've been talking about, so I won't go into it. But the unique thing we did see was the black rhino, but like super, super far from a distance.
Hey, I'm just gonna cut in again here because there was a tech issue and my phone died while I was recording this, and I didn't realize because it was pointed away from me on a stand. So I record the video for this on my phone and I record the audio on the laptop using the microphone that you see on the screen. I did not have any idea that the phone was going to die, but it did. And while I kept yammering on, I was not recording. So I'm just going to redo this little bit at the end. I also went to the Giraffe Manor, which is this odd place that you can stay in the manor if you want to overnight. It's insanely expensive, so I did not do this. But that's where you'll see all the Instagram influencers with staying in this manor, and there's like a giraffe coming in the window, like eating their food that they're eating at the table. It's a beautiful photo, but it's very, very expensive, and I did not have the resources to do this. So I went to the part of the Giraffe Manor that you can kind of just feed and interact with the giraffes. I know I mentioned earlier about that's a hallmark of a place being unethical when you can interact with the animals, but the giraffe are not like trained in any way, or they're not in tiny pens. They can very much roam around wherever they want. If they happen to come near you and you can feed them, that's fine, but it's very much on their terms. So I do think that that place is pretty ethical, though it does offer animal interactions. But it was really cool, and we had these pellets, and this is a bit weird, but you put the pellet in your mouth. This is what the guy told me to do. And the giraffe comes and like takes it out of your mouth. Not trained to do this. It just wants the food. So I hope it wasn't unethical. I don't think it was. But if you have any opinions on this, do let me know in the comments below. And then I flew away. I went back to, I think, Europe. I'm not sure exactly where I went after that. Possibly India. I'm not entirely sure the trajectory. It's all a bit jumbled in my mind. But it was one of only two experiences I've had in Africa. The subsequent one was more recent in Uganda. I'll talk about that in a different podcast. But it was like one of the best experiences I've ever had. Fantastic safari. Did not feel unsafe anywhere, even though I was like completely alone. Traveling completely alone. Of course, there was guides and there was groups and stuff, so I wasn't alone, but I was traveling on my own. And yeah, that's pretty much it. If you do have any comments or questions about African safaris, especially in Kenya and Tanzania, do leave them in the comments below. If you like the video, please subscribe to the channel and you will get updates about the next videos. I release them every 2 weeks. And that's pretty much it. Thanks for watching, and I will see you in the next video.